Let me talk at least about this first slide. This makes it even more likely that we'll get done early the last day before the test. The final chapter for this unit is about chemotrophic energy metabolism, and specifically it's about glycolysis and fermentation. So we're going to study the complete oxidation of glucose as the master fuel. And by complete oxidation, I mean taking glucose and using it completely as far as the usable energy is concerned, which means the end point is what? What is it? Carbon dioxide and water, right. Exactly. Completely spent fuel is CO2. Not that there isn't any energy in that molecule, it's just not accessible energy to the cell. So you take a 6-carbon glucose and you totally dismantle that skeleton and pick the hydrogens off of it. That's the complete oxidation of that fuel. That's how we get the maximum amount of energy for us. Well, the reason I'm mentioning this is because that overall process is multi-step, of course. And some of this we're going to treat on this upcoming test. The rest of it is for the test after that. So glycolysis comes first. That's part of the complete oxidation of glucose. That will be on this test. What's the major set of steps after that? Cellular respiration, exactly, which will be on test 3 or whatever it is. Yeah, 3, I guess. Okay, well, if you think about things in terms of goals, the energy that is in the food molecules that you eventually absorb into your body after digesting them into small enough particles, some of that energy, of course, is going to be lost as heat. There's no way around that law of thermodynamics. But some of that energy will be usefully stored in the form of ATP molecules. So if you want to think about a goal, in a sense, of the complete oxidation of the fuel, which is glucose or any other fuel, but glucose is the master fuel, then that goal is to maximize the number of ATP molecules that can be produced, locking up as much of that food energy as possible. I shouldn't say locking it up, because storage of energy in the form of ATP is very transient. You don't keep ATP molecules very long. They're spent just about as fast as they're made, but then they're made back into ATP. It's a continuous process. Anyway, ATP plays a central role, obviously. It's not the only energy storage molecule, but it's the most often used one, not only in your own cells, but in cells, period. Which is why it's often given the nickname the energy currency of the cell. Right? You've probably read that definition. The analogy with currency or money is a good one, really. Because nowadays, at least, very few people work directly for their needs, for their food or for the shelter or whatever. Instead, you work, you put in your effort in order to earn money, which represents that effort, stores that effort in a sense. And then that's a versatile thing that you can use, you can spend, used to do just about any kind of additional work, like having your lawn cut by someone else, for instance. That's what we're doing with ATP, really. We're temporarily investing that energy of the food in the form of ATP molecules, which can then be broken down again to release that energy to drive endergonic reactions in cells. The point here is that we don't take food molecules and catabolize them, which would be an exergonic process, right? We don't catabolize them so that that energy released is directly used to drive endergonic processes. ATP instead is the middleman. We break down our food molecules to release energy to store the energy in the form of ATP, building those molecules up, and then we immediately break those molecules down to release energy to do the final work, whatever that goal is. We, I'll say, mostly don't. Almost never. Okay, so let's consider why an ATP molecule is a good way to store energy. It's because of the bonds between its phosphate groups. So ATP, of course, has three phosphates, which makes it a nucleotide, of course, but more specifically, we could say that it is a nucleoside triphosphate, right? That tells you exactly how many phosphates it has. It's a nucleotide just if it has at least one phosphate, so the word nucleotide is ambiguous. Nucleoside triphosphate is more specific. It tells you that there are exactly three. But adenosine triphosphate is the specific kind of nucleoside triphosphate because the specific nucleoside is adenosine, which gets its name from the fact that the sugar that's in that nucleoside is specifically ribose, not deoxyribose, in other words. And the nitrogenous base in adenosine is specifically adenine, not guanine or cytosine or thymine or uracil. Okay? So obviously the nucleoside itself, which is just the sugar and the nitrogenous base, is named for the base. Adenine is the base by itself. The base and the sugar together by themselves are adenosine, named for that base. And if you hook on at least one phosphate, you have a nucleotide. Well, if you hook on three, you have a nucleoside triphosphate. Anyway, it's notice the connection points between the phosphate and other things here. This first phosphate, which is connected directly to the adenosine molecule, is an example of a phosphoester bond, which is chemically a little bit different from the bonds between the first and second phosphate and the bond between the second and third phosphate, both of which are phosphoanhydride bonds. And those phosphoanhydride bonds are the ones that work as energy storage when it comes to ATP. Which is why when you spend, in a sense, an ATP molecule to do something for you, what you're doing usually is breaking this terminal phosphoanhydride bond. And the result, of course, is then ADP, because it still has two phosphates, and an inorganic phosphate, P sub I, rendered inorganic by the fact that it no longer is directly associated with a carbon skeleton anymore. The carbon skeleton is in the adenosine. You can also strip two of the phosphates off, though. You could do that in one shot, turning ATP into AMP and pyrophosphate, which is two phosphates still stuck together. Or you could do it in two steps. You could turn ATP into ADP and then spend ADP to turn it into AMP, adenosine monophosphate. But that's what usually happens. You don't use AMP, in other words, as a source of stored energy. You don't strip that only remaining phosphate off. You don't break that phosphodiester bond for the purposes of energy storage, at least. So AMP really, as if you're talking about it as an energy storing molecule, AMP is like a debit card with a very low balance. And you need to make a deposit in order for it to be useful again. That's what you do with AMP. You build it back into ATP, investing it with some of the energy that came from the fuel that you burned, from the food that you ate. The energetics are shown on the bottom. And this is for the breaking of this terminal phosphoanhydride bond. So it's a reversible reaction, notice. The top shows you hydrolysis. This means breaking this thing apart, right? That's what kind of reaction it is when you break this phosphoanhydride bond. It's a hydrolysis reaction, just like when you break apart a polymer. So water is necessary, and that's going to give you ADP and inorganic phosphate. But notice that the delta G naught prime for that hydrolysis reaction is negative in sign, which means exergonic, right? Well, how exergonic? 7.3 kilocalories per mole. So if you hydrolyze a mole of ATP molecules, which is Avogadro's numbers, a hell of a big number, then you liberate 7.3 kilocalories of energy. Notice that it's exactly the same amount to build an ATP out of ADP and inorganic phosphate, but it's a positive sign. That's because it's an endergonic process to condense, to do the reverse of the hydrolysis, which is to synthesize the ATP via condensation reaction. It's just a reversible reaction. And so it's freely reversible, notice. There's not one long arrow and one short arrow. That's important, of course, right? You need to be able to build ATP, and you need to be able to spend it. So it's ATP doesn't last, like I said, as in any individual, ATP does not last very long. It'll quickly get turned into ADP, and then the next moment it'll get turned back into ATP. It's just back and forth between those two, usually. AMP, if it builds up in your cells, that's a signal to your cells, well, you better start making some ATP, because you've not only used ATP, which would make normally ADP, you've used your ADP, which is why there's now AMP. So it's a signal to the body that it's an energetically emergency situation, basically. You need to bring in some energy and restore your balance on your debit card. You want to stop there? Okay.